on Rosen.
It's movie time. Brett Hoffman from Marcus Theaters on board. Hey, good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Don.
So I got to see The Odyssey this past week, and it was worth all the hype. It was really good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I didn't know we were going to see a Cyclops. Well, I don't want to ruin it for people. But I didn't know some of the special effects we were going to see in the film, and it was very good. I just read something or heard something yesterday, how difficult it was to film it with IMAX cameras. Because you don't have a lot of film in an IMAX camera. They got to keep changing it around. And I just thought you film it regular and then just convert it to IMAX. But apparently, I don't know what I'm talking about. Because that's not how you do it. Wow, that's a lot of work to do that with an IMAX camera. It's almost like the old Cinerama film days when they had to have three cameras on a pedestal at one time they were filming a movie. That's got to be crazy. Anyway...
Yeah, and Christopher Nolan just loves doing different formats. So I tell everyone, if you've seen The Odyssey, go out and check it out in 70mm. It really is a treat. We've got that at our Marcus Majestic Cinema. I've seen it twice now. I saw it once in regular digital, and then I saw it once in 70mm. And it does have a different, neat look to it. So for all those that are looking for a harkening back, go check that out. But still running in 70mm in Brookfield, Wisconsin at the Majestic Cinema.
And let me know if anybody sees it, if you can read the credits at the end of the movie. I don't know why he made him like that. Usually they do it real distinct, like it's a white lettering on black. It's just like light gray on gray. You can't read any of them. And I love to sit through the credits because I want to see who was who. I didn't recognize Charlize Theron in the film. I didn't recognize her. My wife did. I didn't recognize her. And I also didn't recognize Zendaya in the movie as well. I mean, it didn't look like them. Now, there is one interesting point, though. Tom Holland, who's in the biggest blockbuster of the summer, Spider-Man, also has a major role in The Odyssey. I mean, this guy's, he did two of the biggest hits of the summer. Wow. Who's his agent?
Well, let's just say he's got success a long time coming. I think a few things lined up for the next few years.
Wow. All right. Let's talk about some new movies out here. We got a couple of horror movies out. Let's talk about The End of Oak Street.
Well, the first one is, it's a thriller movie. It's from Warner Brothers. The End of Oak Street is rated PG-13, getting a great Rotten Tomatoes score, currently at 86%. And this one is produced by J.J. Abrams, but it stars Anne Hathaway and Ethan McGregor. Their parents in this regular suburban neighborhood that's suddenly ripped out of the world they know by a mysterious cosmic event, and they wake up kind of somewhere else. And when they look around, the family quickly discovers that wherever they have ended up, dinosaurs are now part of their neighborhood. And as you can imagine, for humans, that presents a few problems from a predatory standpoint. So really fun movie here. J.J. Abrams is a producer. David Robert Mitchell, who's best known for the acclaimed horror movie It Follows, directed this one. So great old school adventure movie feel here. Let's see. Chaos, suburbia, and dinosaurs. You're going to love it on screen. It's a good movie.
And Anne Hathaway's in this film. Also in The Odyssey, she plays the wife of Odysseus in this movie. And I got to tell you, so I recognized her immediately on screen. All I kept thinking was The Devil Wears Prada. That's, you know, just have her in that... You know, getting yelled at by, you know, Meryl Streep. That's all I thought of when I saw her in that movie. All right, next movie up, another dinosaur movie, two in a row. Let's talk about Paw Patrol, the dino movie.
That's right. I don't know that they did that on purpose, but there are two dinosaur movies coming out. Very, very different genres. Paw Patrol, the dino movie, Paramount Pictures putting this out. Rated PG, of course, based on the very popular children's series Paw Patrol. And in this one, it's actually the third Paw Patrol movie. And we find the pups going back to the prehistoric times. After their ship gets caught in a mysterious storm, they find themselves in uncharted tropical territory on an island that's populated by dinosaurs. So if anyone's had kids, if anyone's had grandkids, they know that Paw Patrol is very, very popular, especially for kids of a certain age. So if they enjoy Paw Patrol, this is one they're going to enjoy as well.
Yeah, a few weeks ago, we had Hades, the Broadway musical on the screen, Hadestown. Now we got another one, Six.
Yeah, and these really look spectacular on screen when you look at the production value. So I'd say if you're a Broadway fan that's been to these musicals, don't discount the on-screen performance because they look different, and the perspective you get is much different than if you're sitting in the upper deck, even if you're sitting in the lower bowl. Depending on where you're sitting at theater, you only get one perspective. You definitely get a different perspective when these things are up on screen. And this one is 60 Musical Live. It's being put out by Focus Features, which is a division of Universal Pictures. It's rated PG-13, but it's really neat because this was captured in London's Vaudeville Theater and it reunited six of the original West End talents who helped turn the show into this international phenomenon. So the concept of six, by the way, is wonderfully simple, but it plays itself out. It's about the six wives of Henry VIII, and they're reimagined as pop stars, each taking the stage to tell their stories. And this is a big stage production. It won Tony Awards when it was out. And it's part concert, part musical is what people say. So that's a description for it. Of course, a lot of people know Six the Musical. Go see it if you know it. If you don't and just like musicals, this one's a great one as well.
Could you imagine pitching that to a producer, bring it to Broadway? Listen, I got this great idea. The Six Wives of Henry VIII. But they're going to be singers. They're going to be rocking and rolling on stage, doing disco, they're everything. What do you think? Will you put $45 million into that? That's got to be a hard pitch.
Imagine Hamilton. Imagine someone going and saying, yes, we want to tell the story of Alexander Hamilton, but we want to do it contemporary with some rap and some other contemporary music. And don't worry, the kids are going to love it.
Yeah, could you give me $50
million? Exactly.
It's not cheap to put on a Broadway musical for people who don't know. It's pretty expensive. Just the theater alone, the rent on those places is huge. All right, the next one's an historical drama, and I was thinking while I was reading this morning that I remember this happening, but most people going to the movie weren't even born when this was happening, so I aged myself here. It's The Brink of War.
Yes, The Brink of War from Angel Studios. It's rated PG. In this one, Jeff Daniels plays Ronald Reagan, and Jared Harris plays Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. And it's a dramatization of the historic 1986 Reykjavik summit between the two. And then that one, the two leaders met, and it was one of the biggest tense periods of the Cold War as they were trying to reach agreement on what would go on with the nuclear arsenals of both countries. So Jeff Daniels is Reagan, Jared Harris is Mikhail Gorbachev, and J.K. Simmons plays Secretary of State George Shultz as well in this one. We had several word-of-mouth early access screenings for some of our members on this one, and it was very much enjoyed by those that attended, especially those. This was one where everyone kind of said, of a certain age, I remember that, but didn't quite recall it until I saw the picture. But it was really interesting to play these two out. If you can imagine the two biggest leaders of the world at the time sitting at a table between, you know, with only a table between them in Iceland trying to hash this out. There are some tense moments and it's really well done.
Yeah, Angel Studios, they started out by putting out The Chosen, the religious movies, and they branched out to historical movies. They do that a lot now.
Yeah, they've branched out a lot. They have a guild now. You can join their guild. You can vote on what things come next. You can help crowdfund their operations. So it's a really unique studio, really taking shape, a different way to look at movies. And they've got some interesting movies coming up, everything from action to faith-based movies to they've got a movie about a documentary about a drama documentary about the story of the Hershey family and how that company came about as well. That's coming out this holiday season. So great things from them, and The Brink of War is another one of those from them as well.
Talking to Brett Hoffman of Marcus Theaters this morning, we got some movie news. Let's kick it off with a movie this is called On the Shelf. In other words, they made the movie, they stuck it in storage and forgot about it. Coyote versus Acme, and now it's out.
That's right. Well, it's going to be out. So we're going to see Coyote versus Acme. It is coming out at the end of this month, so it should be really interesting. So we're going to follow this one because it comes out on August 28th. But here's the crazy story to its road to being released in a couple weeks. So 3 years ago, Warner Brothers had made a stunning decision to shelve the already completed Coyote versus Acme movie rather than release it. It's a live-action hybrid that stars Will Forte, and it's built around a terrific premise. Wile E. Coyote takes the Acme Corporation to court because all of the products he bought over several years, spending millions of dollars, kept blowing up in his face and did not work. So Warner Brothers looked at this, and actually they planned, and I don't know much about the tax history, but supposedly they were going to shelve this and take a write-off for the movie. This caused an uproar from people, so Warner Brothers ultimately sold the rights to Ketchup Entertainment for the movie, and now it's scheduled to come out. So this is really interesting because you had a big studio decide to shelve it. You had public backlash. You had someone else pick the movie up. And we'll see, and we'll all be able to judge for ourselves in 2 weeks.
So Coyote, it's a live action. So they're actually actors? How do they work this now? It's still got to be animated, right?
It's animated. I guess there's some different premises where it's a hybrid type of thing. Yep.
Now, interesting, because in every single Coyote Roadrunner cartoon, we never heard them talk. They never talk. It was beep, beep. That was it. Nobody had a voice. It'd be interesting to see them talk for the first time. they never had a voice. Okay, Practical Magic 2. Let's talk about that, but we get some movie news on that.
Yeah, this movie is coming out on September 11th. People are really looking forward to this one because Sandra Bullock and Nicole Kidman are returning. And there were some behind-the-scenes videos that have been recently released, and everyone's looking at the movie's famous Victorian house. And here's an interesting story. The original Victorian house from the original Practical Magic didn't ever survive. It was just a set, and they tore it down and got rid of it. And it was a very elaborate set built in 1998. And sure enough, so in Practical Magic 2, filmmakers had to rebuild the entire iconic house. So check it out. See if you can tell any differences. I doubt you will. Supposedly, they were very meticulous about this, but it's an interesting story about who would ever thought we're going to have to redo this thing again. And that's probably why if you ever go to Hollywood, they have all these costume departments and all the storage and all these things, just in case they might need this stuff in the future.
Well, the one house they never got rid of was the Psycho House. It's still there on the Universal lot, exactly where they built it in 1960 for the original Psycho. They never moved it. So, and they used it a couple of, I think Psycho 4 was the last Psycho movie they made. But it's only a facade. There's really no house there. But people think, you know, I was there at Universal. So it looks like a house, but they said it's not. All right, let's talk about some movie anniversaries out here. An American Werewolf in London, 45 years ago. Whoa.
Yeah, it was released on August 21st of 1981. John Landis's horror comedy with an American werewolf. This is two American backpackers traveled through England. And one of them was attacked by a werewolf. So of course, this was one of the biggest things because there was a transformation scene that was just phenomenal with the person turning into a werewolf. Actually, Rick Baker, who is the special effects artist, won an Academy Award for this movie. And he eventually went on to win 7 total Oscars in that category. So American Werewolf in London, still a classic and still holds up on screen if you go see that one.
I forgot the guy who played the lead in that. I forget his name, but he was also on Seinfeld. And every time I saw him on Seinfeld, that's the guy from the werewolf movie. All right, next one is one of my favorite horror movies in history. It's a remake, and they remade it 40 years ago. The Fly with Jeff Goldblum.
That's right, August 15th, 1986. So David Cronenberg's The Fly starred Jeff Goldblum and Gina Davis. And Goldblum played a scientist. His name was Seth Brundle. And his teleportation experiment went horribly wrong. And that happened when a fly entered the teleportation chamber. This also features an increasingly gruesome transformation effect scene that made the movie famous. So The Fly, 40 years ago, and what a great performance by Jeff Goldblum.
I never forgot when they opened his closet in his where he was living. He had all these same exact suits with the exact shirts and the exact ties. And Gina Davis said, well, why do you have all the same clothing? He said, that way I don't have to think in the morning when I get dressed. It's already done. And I look at my closet sometimes and say, that's not a bad idea. Get all the same clothing and you don't have to think anymore. All right. I love The Fly, by the way. And it also came out around Aliens time. So they put it on a double bill, Aliens and The Fly. What a great double bill, huh? Wow. And it keeps you going for like 4 hours. Brendelfly is what he called himself in the movie, Jeff Goldblum. All right, next one is called Tin Cup. It came out 30 years ago. Let's talk about that.
This is one of my favorite sports movies and one of my favorite Kevin Costner movies as well, because it's so well done and hard to believe it's 30 years old, but it's a golf romantic comedy that starred Kevin Costner, Rene Russo, Cheech Marish, and Don Johnson. And it opened up August 16th, 1996. Costner plays Roy, Tin Cup McIlvay, a talented but self-destructive driving range pro who gets his chance to qualify for the U.S. Open. And that's because the U.S. Open, he said, was the most democratic open because anyone can enter into regional tournaments to get into it. And great, funny movie there. Still holds up. Check this out. You don't have to be a golf fan to enjoy this one. But that's Tin Cup with Kevin Costner.
And if you're flying in the next week or so, be careful when you open up that overhead bin. You'll never know what you find in there. Snakes on a Plane with Samuel L. Jackson, 20 years old.
20 years ago, when this movie came out, everyone thought this is ludicrous. But that premise alone made it a hit. Samuel L. Jackson played an FBI agent transporting a witness aboard a commercial flight. And yes, all of these poisonous snakes are released onto the airplane and chaos ensues. So the story behind the movie may have fed it, and it was actually more famous probably than the movie itself. Because remember, 20 years ago, we didn't have today's social media environment. So it became this enormous internet phenomenon simply because people thought the title and premise were so ridiculous that they were talking about it. They were doing all kinds of crazy things with this one. Still a fun kind of campy movie to go see. So this is one of those late night, you're looking for something to do. You're looking for something to enjoy yourself. Snakes on a Plane is a great guilty pleasure movie, and it's now 20 years old.
And what movie is this line from? I hate snakes.
It's one of the Indiana Jones, but I don't know. Which
Raiders
one
of the Lost Ark. I hate snakes. All right. I got some movie news for you here. The Jetsons, big TV show back in the 60s. Everybody's watching The Jetsons on television, the animated show. Then they made an animated movie out of it, and now they said it's time for the live-action version of Jetsons, starring Jim Carrey, I guess as George Jetson, I would assume. So, you hear anything about that?
Not yet, but we'll see what goes on.
You know, I never saw one episode of The Jetsons, and I'm a child of the 60s. I never saw The Jetsons before. Actually, it's not called The Jetsons. It's just called Jetsons, period. Grown Ups 3, officially in production. Adam Sandler posted a cast photo, so I didn't know they had a Grown Ups 2, but I guess they're moving on to 3. The original Grown Ups wasn't bad. Isn't that when they went on a big camping trip or something, Grown Ups? Do you remember that? Was it something? I think it was something like that. Grown. Anyway, so obviously 1 and 2 made enough money where they're doing a number 3. There's a trailer out now for Primetime starring Robert Pattinson as To Catch a Predator host Chris Hansen. Did I read they had to get rid of that show? Because there was something they did that wasn't kosher on that show. So they got rid of it, To Catch a Predator, Chris Hansen. So now they're making a movie about it called Primetime. With Robert Pattinson. I assume it's a theatrical release. Do you hear anything about it?
It is going to be a theatrical release, of course. This was a phenomenon years ago in terms of it started out. I believe that it started out as a spinoff of Dateline NBC, but it started off as just a segment, and it was so popular that it became its own show.
Yeah. All right, Ranker.com put out a list on the best high school movies of all time because high school is starting shortly. All right, number 10 was Clueless. Number 9, Dead Poets Society. Number 8, 10 Things I Hate About You, preceded by one of my favorites, Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Gee, Mr. Hand. I love Spicoli. Gee, Mr. Hand. Mean Girls, number 6. 5, 16 Candles. A good movie. Grease, number 4. Here's a movie I've never seen before, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I can't believe I've never seen that.
I can't believe it either.
You never saw it either?
I've seen it, but I can't believe you haven't.
No, I know. It's hard to believe. Number 2 is Back to the Future. One of my favorite lines in that film is when he goes back to see his principal. He said, didn't that guy ever have hair? And number 1, oh, a classic. You guys ran an anniversary showing of it, and I took my son, my wife, and I. We went, The Breakfast Club. That's so good. And, I love it. You guys, it was so many people, you had to expand it to the next theater. You had to open up another theater showing The Breakfast Club. Classic movie. All right, my friend. Another week, another movie. And hold on the line. Don't go anywhere there. Brett Hoffman of Marcus Theaters. Thanks for joining us. I know it's early in the morning. I thank you for doing that, by the way. Appreciate it.